at a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, March 6th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and my objective here is the same as always, which is to help you become a better investor. And I do that by answering your finance and investment questions, number one. And number two, it's bringing my topics to the table and discussing what is on my mind, what I think is pertinent, what I'm reading about, what I'm following, and as a professional, right, doing this for clients. And so this is a two-way street. I'm giving you my feedback of what I'm seeing in the market, and we rely also on your feedback of what you are thinking about, what is important to you. So your calls are welcome at any time, 888-99-CHART. Now, before we get deep in today's show and remind you about our new market-oriented contest, it's called the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. It's underway now, and instead of basketball brackets, we are pitting companies head-to-head. You can join the fun and navigate through the market's ups and downs and compete for the grand prize of $1,000. Free to enter. You just have to head over to investtalk.com, download your brackets, fill them out, and complete the link provided. But hurry. You have until March 17th to submit your predictions. Now, be sure to download every podcast for more updates and details about the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Now, that said, we're going to talk about the market performance as well as run down some show topics, but right after we answer our first caller question now.
How are you guys doing? Great show, by the way. So I had a quick question for you guys. I'm looking at a stock called The Trade Desk. Ticker symbol is TTD. Just wanted to get you guys' opinion on it and if you think this is a good company to get into and what you think would be a good price for me to buy the stock. Thanks, guys. I'll be listening on the show.
All right. Looking at The Trade Desk, this is a name that peaked out kind of when all the growth stocks peaked out in late 2021, hit a high of $113 per share, fell all the way down to, about $40 per share. Pretty big drop there. Now we're back up to $82 per share. Now, I will say near-term technicals are solid. You had a good earnings announcement on, February 16th. And we've kind of been trading in a range between 80 and 85 ever since. So that is what we call bullish consolidation. Now, that's technicals, that's near term, but what about the fundamentals of the business? Now, if you look at profitability, that's pretty good profits. Gross profit margins are about 81%, operating margins around 10%, solid. But it's kind of a software name. It's a cyclical business because what do? They're a self-service platform for ad buyers to purchase and manage data-driven digital advertising campaigns. So if digital advertising is doing well, then they're going to get more business. But their growth has certainly slowed. A couple of years ago, revenue growth was in the mid-30s to the low 40 range. The last four quarters, it's been stuck in the low 20% range. So part of that's law of large numbers. Part of that is just a slowdown in their business. And profits are certainly slowing down as well. So to earn $1.48 this year from $1.26 last year, that's 17% growth rate. Solid. But how much are you willing to pay for a high teens growth? Not what it's trading at now, I'll tell you that much. Price sales around 21 times. Said this many times before. History does not shine very brightly on people who buy companies at 21 or just say 20 plus times sales. It's extremely rare for you to anyone to buy a company at those multiples and make money in the long term, because it's just the level of growth that's built in, the level of profitability that's built in. And frankly, I just don't see it here over the long term. You're looking at return on equity around 8.5% right now. Its longer term average is in the mid-teens, which is good, but not anything you can't find anywhere else at more reasonable valuations. So free cash flow is $543 million. That's good. It's near an all-time high, although that did dip down in the most recent quarter. But you're talking about a market cap of, or an enterprise value of, nearly $40 billion. Talking about a 1.5% free cash flow yield. Not good enough. Not good enough at all. So if you want to take a trade near term, sure. But I wouldn't touch this until it's closer to $30 per share. That's where, okay, maybe the valuations start to become more reasonable. But yeah, depends on your time horizon here. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And our main focus point concerns three retirement decisions affected by higher interest rates. This is very interesting. I really like this topic because people aren't used to this. We were in an era of low rates for post-financial crisis over a decade, nearly 15 years, and everyone got used to it. Well, we're back to the cost of capital being something, the yield you can get on fixed income products being solid, decent, you know, not amazing, but closer to long-term averages. And those elevated bond yields have an impact on decisions that can be made, because there are, as I said on yesterday's show, there's opportunity cost. If you make one decision, you lock up capital, for example, your opportunity cost of taking that money and earning a high yield on it is now much higher, right? There's, before, the opportunity cost was next to nothing. Hey, cash isn't giving me anything, so might as well go put it into assets. Try to chase yield, try to get yield. Now you don't need to chase yield. You can get a nice 5% yield on treasuries, for example. So there are some ramifications here that I want to get into when you're investing for retirement and weighing stability versus risk in retirement, and whether investing in bonds versus these other alternatives is the right move now. In addition, we're going to touch on gold. Gold is at a record high. It's not talked about much. It's not getting much fanfare, but we're going to talk about what the catalyst might be for that all-time high. Also, the golden age for stock markets drawing to a close? Is it? We're going to ask that question and weigh in on it. And then lastly, is your 401k destroying capitalism? Something we wanted to get to, I think, on a previous show, but never got to. So I want to touch on that if we have time. We also have some voice bank questions. One is in regards to Blackstone, and the other is Coupang. CPNG is the symbol. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions right now on 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember that you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it.
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. Please tell your friends and family members that they can download our weekday podcast for free anytime at InvestTalk.com or iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And when you download and listen, please be sure to rate our podcasts. Our anytime listener line is open, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Chris in Florida looking at Sandridge Energy, SD.
Hey, Justin. Yeah, I own this one. I picked it up a while back. I know you guys used to hold this for clients. So I was just wondering if you guys still hold it and what you think of the business.
Yeah, we actually do still hold it. We started buying it around the $2 to $3 range. Now it's at $13.06. Now that is down from its high around in the mid-20s, but there has been a lot of dividends and special dividends as of late, especially the last one that just went X. That was on the 2nd of February. I think it was $1.50, something like that. $1.20, I forget exactly what it was. But pretty big payout. Now, their traditional, their standard dividend is about 3.1%, which is solid. But their business is still very good. Yeah, it's come off its highs, but its trailing 12-month free cash flow is around $80 million on an enterprise value of $250 million. Yeah, the market cap's nearly $500, but they have a ton of cash sitting on the balance sheet. So this free cash flow yield is extremely high, north of 20%. So we're still fans of it, and I would continue to hold it if you do.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Now let's take a look at the market for today. We had that pretty big sell-off, especially on the growth side of the market yesterday, and you had a bit of a bounce back, although large cap growth did not do very well. And the Mag 7 outside of NVIDIA didn't do very well either. You had Amazon, look at this. You had the broad U.S. market was up over 0.5%. Small caps up 0.75%. Sorry, 2/3 of 1%. Mid caps up nearly 1%. And you had Amazon down. You had Apple down. You had Tesla down. You had Google down. You had Microsoft down. All the big bellwethers down. Despite a robust day for everything else. NVIDIA really held up that part of the market up under $27 today, about, 3.5%, 4%. So I'll be very interested to see if we get any follow through though to the downside from yesterday. That's what I'm watching. I was looking at the chart, over the past year. And if you go back to July 27th of last year, you had a big risk off day. And then you had 3 days of just the market chopping sideways. And then you had the follow through. And pretty much from there until the bottom on October 27th, the market was in a downtrend. And so I'll be very interested to see, is this a similar situation where you get a couple consolidation days and you get a follow through maybe Friday, maybe Monday, maybe Tuesday? We shall see. But something I'm definitely on watch for, that yesterday was a sign that we're right at that market peak. Now, no guarantee here, and doesn't mean the market has to peak, you know, for the next decade, but just talking about the start of a traditional risk off pullback in markets that refreshes everything, gets people less bullish, back on the bear train, thinking the world's going to end, and that gives you the fuel for that next move higher. It's probably what it would be. And remember, the BTFP program that was launched by the Fed after the banking crisis last spring, and guess what? The spring is coming up pretty fast. That's expiring. That program is expiring on Monday. And that has been a source of liquidity for the markets and growing or stable Fed balance sheet. Well, now that's going to be gone and QT is going to take over. There's still the RRP, reverse repo, that's draining. That's providing liquidity to the market. So certainly a mixed bag, but that's one potential catalyst for liquidity to start to ebb a little bit. And that could spark a market sell-off as well. So that's kind of what I'm seeing right now. Nothing confirming, but on watch for that confirmation move over the next week or so. Now, this is InvestTalk, now with more than 58 million downloads, thanks to you. And our phone lines are open, waiting for your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Everybody wants a secure financial future. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Mike in Maine. He wants to talk about DSTs, Deferred Sales Trusts, I'm assuming, correct?
Delaware Statutory Trusts.
Okay. Similar, yes.
Okay, same thing. I'm not sure.
Similar,
I'll say that. What's your opinion, or what are the risks for utilizing the DSTs for a 1031 exchange?
Well, first off, the question is, I always step back and I say, there are many vehicles you can use to defer taxes, especially on real estate, and a lot of people just think of 1031 exchange. That's all your only option. There are other options as well. So I think the real question is, okay, sounds like you want to sell a property, right? And you don't want to incur the tax. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. What do you want that money to go into? Do you want to keep it in real estate, or do you want maybe it to go into something else, stocks, bonds, a business, something else that you may be eyeing? Just say that.
So, I mean, I would put it into something else, but okay. I thought the money had to go into like a like property.
Yeah, that's true if it's a 1031 exchange, but there are other vehicles. A deferred sales trust is one of them. It's probably the best one. And that allows you to defer that all of that capital gains and put it in, take the proceeds of that sale and put it into stocks, bonds, et cetera. Mutual funds, ETFs, things like that, where you don't have to be a landlord anymore and you can take the money out kind of on a regular scheduled basis. So if you don't want to be in real estate anymore, that's the route I would go. If you do, then 1031 exchange is a good vehicle for that. So I guess the question would be, what's the value of this property? You know, how much are you looking to defer, et cetera?
I think the value of the property is somewhere around 500.
500,000.
Yeah. So I'd probably take, most of that and, push it into something. I like the real estate idea, moving it into real estate, but, everything is so expensive right now. That's why I was moving towards a DST, which allows you to have a fractional, ownership.
Yeah, I mean, there are vehicles like that. Now, is this your personal residence or is this an investment property you own?
It's an investment property.
Okay.
It's a retail commercial space.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Usually deferred sales trusts are for, you need probably more like $1 million plus to make the cost worthwhile. Because remember, there are lawyers involved. They're expensive for whatever route you go, for it to pay for all those lawyers. And so the amount you defer in taxes has to really be a lot, right? So what did you pay for the property? Let's say that.
180.
Okay. And then you add all the other costs into it. Remember, you're probably in a long-term capital gain situation, so it may not be worth it. Let's just say that. All right, we're heading to a break. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point concerns this topic, three key retirement decisions affected by higher interest rates. And we know we're in a new era of more normal interest rates. And this has multiple impacts, not just on your portfolio, but on your opportunities across your entire financial landscape. And the first one for most retirees is actually annuities. Why? Because insurance companies, they invest their capital, invest your premiums in typically bonds and cash. And they were struggling for many years to try to invest their money safely. And therefore, it was difficult to get much yield from things like fixed annuities because the insurance company couldn't do it. But now yields are up and companies can afford to boost the payouts to new annuity buyers. Now, you still have to weigh a purchase of an annuity, which might have a better yield than it had in the past, with things like liquidity. Because remember, you buy an annuity, your money's locked up. And if you want something that's indexed to inflation, your rider on that is going to be very expensive, typically not worth it. So you have to ask yourself, yes, you have to lock in a much higher rate, but if inflation continues to go higher, that 6% fixed annuity yield might look great today, but it might look terrible 5 years from now. Whereas you could take that money and buy TIPS, for example, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, and you have a hedge against inflation. You have the security of the principal. So while annuities look much more attractive today than it did a few years ago, there's still way more drawbacks to them, especially as an entire planning portfolio. As a sliver, as a slice, maybe only fixed annuities, not variable annuities, but they can fit and the payouts are a little juicier than they have been. Then long-term care, that's another one. Very similarly, you would think, okay, you pay into these long-term care policies, they're able to invest that money at a higher rate. That should mean you have to pay in less. Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. Now, one of the big reasons is because a lot of insurers exited that market. And so a lot of the cheaper policies from years back are no longer available. So premiums are pretty high. There are only six companies still left in 2023 that provide long-term care insurance. So it's a less competitive market, number one. And number two is labor costs. The costs of medical care just continue to go higher. And therefore, the insurers have to pass that on to the buyer as well. Now, one thing that a lot of people should think about, if they made the mistake of buying a whole or universal policy, which I know if you have one out there, you're probably saying, yeah, that was probably a mistake, is you can actually, if that insurance company is a provider of long-term care insurance, to do what is called a 1035 exchange, tax-free, and roll that whole or universal life policy into a long-term care policy. That is one thing you should explore if you're saying, God, I have this policy. I don't really want it anymore. It's super expensive. It's not a good investment vehicle. By the way, this is what everyone thinks when they buy a whole universal life policy. And you say, what do I do with it? What am I going to do with it? Well, a long-term care policy could be an option. And then decision number three, Social Security. Now, it used to be a no-brainer. Between the ages, full retirement age and 70, you get 8% increase in your payout each year that you wait. Guaranteed. And then when Social Security inflation adjusts, well, that inflation adjustment is on that higher amount as well. So it's really a no-brainer to wait. Now, it used to be a super no-brainer because the opportunity cost of taking that money today and going and invested in bonds, for example, wasn't that high because bond yields are really low. But now you can get 6, 7, 8%. You get more liquidity, more flexibility, etc. You know, in those mid-60s. And it's less of a no-brainer. Now, it's still probably for most people, especially those that are in good health, that are married, you probably want to wait longer, especially if you have the fiscal ability to. A lot of people, they turn 62, they can't really work, they didn't save enough, and they just need the money, and they take Social Security at 62. It's unfortunate if someone gets there, but that's the case for some people. But if you can, say you have $1 million in the bank at 62, you want to retire early, that's fine. Use some of that $1 million. Take money out of your IRA. We're not earning anything. And then your tax rate's very low to live off of and keep Social Security growing. That's almost the case for everybody out there. Not everybody, but almost everybody. So Social Security, once again, it's not as much of a no-brainer as it was, but still, you probably want to wait. Now let's go back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Calling from Kentucky, and I have a question on Blackstone, BX. Because it's grown to a reasonably large 20% portion of my portfolio, and I'm sitting on over a double in this stock, I'm wondering if this is time to trim a little back and take some profits or let it ride. I know the trees don't grow to the sky, so I'd like your opinion. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Hold on. Did you say 20% of your portfolio? I think that's what I heard. I hope that's not what I heard, but I'm pretty sure that's what I heard. Absolutely. You sell this the first second the market opens tomorrow down to at a minimum 5% of your portfolio. And frankly, I'd probably sell it all. This is a name that's very cyclical. It's very up and down. It's in the alternative asset management business. History says that's very up and down. It's also very tied to private equity, a leveraged play. And earnings are all over the place. They can be up big one year, down big the next. They're all over the place. And you should not have 20% of your portfolio in anything, especially something this volatile, this cyclical. And frankly, right now, this expensive. And it's near major resistance and it's just starting to roll over. The technicals I've been weakening basically since the beginning of the year. It's actually down on the year, even though the market's up. Think about that divergence. So yes, absolutely. Sell at least 3/4 of your position, probably more. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them for the courtesy by getting to the questions quickly. Joel 63 says, love the podcast. What's your opinion on LSB Industries? The symbol is LXU. I'm wondering what your take on the company is, whether now it'd be a good time to start building a position. Oh, this is an interesting one. It's a small cap, $543 million market cap, not billion. And let's see what they do. They're in the ag space, manufacture agricultural, mining, industrial chemicals, and climate control products used in construction. And their business boomed in 2022. They made a ton of money, $3.09. But pre-pandemic, they were losing money. They had a terrible business. Now, granted, they are still profitable, but earnings have fallen from $3.09 to expected this year, $0.32. And it's a $7.31 stock. And it's in a downtrend. The relative strength is 10%. It is doing terribly. Decent amount of debt in its balance sheet, which I don't like. And yes, the return on equity right now is 18%. But its long-term average is negative. This is not a good business. So, no, I see zero reason from a technical perspective or a fundamental reason to buy this. Now, you could say, okay, today was an interesting day. It was a bottoming tail and a high volume. Gonna need some follow through, but that's very, very short term. Yeah, I wouldn't be buying this. I'm passing on it. Let's go to Jeff in San Francisco. Looking at PCG, PG&E.
Yeah, PCG / PRC.
PR what?
PRC.
Okay.
Paul Randy Cat. PCG / PRC.
Is this PCG?
That's PG&E preferred stock.
Ah, preferred. That's what I figured it was. Why do you want to buy this?
Looking at the dividend first, utilities are generally safe. Number two, they have the 20, I know it's at $19 right now, but it's face value of $25.
So first off, when you say utilities are generally safe, yeah, to a degree. But there are always caveats. And I think PCG is the caveat, the main caveat. Why? Because this is a stock that was over $70 per share in 2017. And now it's at $16 per share because of the California fires. You know that liability, right? You live in San Francisco. You know what happened.
Yeah.
You know about the fires. You were probably pretty affected by them. And so I hope you know the potential liability that was laid on PG&E because of those fires, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And
multiple fires.
Yes. And could there be more fires, and could PG&E be held liable once again by the state of California to a level where they go out of business? Do you think that's possible?
No, because they are the only utility in Northern California. Who takes over? That's the only
them. Way. Them. It's not. Yeah, people don't realize. But bankruptcy doesn't mean the company goes away. Okay, it means the capital structure changes. Means the current shareholders are wiped out, and there's a new entity with a new capital structure, and the bondholders, the senior bondholders, are probably going to hold that new entity. Okay, so PG&E will still be around. The infrastructure will still be there. It doesn't poof, go magic, disappear into the air when a company files for bankruptcy. No, that's not how this works. So let me restate that. Could this entity, PG&E, currently, could it go under if there was another fire, major fire season?
Yes.
Okay, so if that's the case, who is the... Who now holds this new entity? Who has the first right to all of the remaining assets in this new entity? Is it
the state of California?
No. It's the current Bondholders, senior bondholders. Okay?
Okay.
And what is a preferred shareholder? Is it a senior bondholder?
No. Well, no. That's what I'm trying to find out with it. Okay.
No.
That's what I'm kind of asking.
Which means that you're getting a cute, nice, you're probably looking at that. Currently, it's yielding about 6.5%. That's nice.
Yep.
But where's the upside? Your upside is 6.5%. Your downside is zero. Zero.
Okay.
If there's another bad fire season, there's more major damage, and California finds PG&E liable, and that pushes them into bankruptcy. Now, is that the likely outcome? Probably not. But is it much higher than most states?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, First off, I don't like preferreds myself because of the situation. Where's the upside? The upside for most businesses is growth of profitability, growth of cash flows, growth. Okay?
Yeah.
That's if you own the common equity. If you own preferred equity, your upside is that yield. That's it. And you don't have the downside protection of being a senior bondholder.
Okay.
So the simple answer is, I think this is a very bad risk versus reward. I think there are much better opportunities with your capital than this.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Do appreciate it.
This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday. And that is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you want to do that right now at 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk. Please tell your friends and family members that they can download our weekday podcast for free anytime at InvestTalk.com. Or iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And when you download and listen, please be sure to rate our podcasts. Our anytime listener line is open, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was hoping you guys could look at Semlar Scientific, Inc., ticker SMLR. They just released earnings, which looked all right, but the price in stock actually just dropped back down quite a bit. But it looks like it dropped straight to the 200-day moving average. So I've learned on the show that this could potentially present a good buying opportunity, drop into this moving average. Fundamentals look pretty good. I was just looking to see if you guys think this could be a buying opportunity or to wait for a couple more days or, you know, jumping in. I'll listen on the show. Thanks as always.
Yeah, typically a pullback to the 200-day moving average is pretty good support. Now, it did have two very large down days over the past couple days since earnings. When before earnings, it was trading near $49 per share. Now, at the close today, it's at $32 and change. So, obviously, earnings disappointed mightily. And, you know, this is kind of a mixed bag here. They don't have any debt. I like that, but their profits are just okay. They're not amazing. Growth is certainly slowed. And I think it's about fair value now. So I think it was overvalued in the 50s or high 40s. And in the low 30s, I think it's about fairly valued. Now you could say, okay, I want a solid company and a decent support, fair value, you know, that's not bad. But it's a very small cap name and, you know, hasn't been around a long time. It's only been profitable for a handful of years. And it's a small cap, only $225 million. So you have to have real stomach for this. It's going to be very volatile as it has over the past couple of days, if you've seen. But if you believe in their product, if they really only have one product that helps test for chronic diseases. If you believe in that product, then I would say go for it. And you're willing to take the risk. But me, I just don't love the risk versus reward or the valuation quite yet. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about gold. I don't know if you know this. No one's talking about it. Gold is at an all-time high. Why? Because you had ISM manufacturing PMI index coming on Friday that was weaker than expected. The jobs portion of that index was also in contractionary territory. And gold had been consolidating for a number of months, right around the $2,000 per ounce, $2,000 per ounce mark. Now we're over $2,150. And support for gold prices is coming from many areas. Now, the main driver is our central banks. And this is all driven from the Ukraine war. Once that happened, what did we in the U.S. do? We confiscated dollar assets from Russia. Now, you can say we should or shouldn't have done it, but there is a reaction to that. And the reaction from the global community is, why buy as many treasuries when I should be buying gold that can't be confiscated? So that's been a consistent bid from places like Russia ever since. On top of that, you have China, which is seeing the same thing. You know, their politics are different than ours. Maybe not the same as Russia, but different than ours. And so they're probably saying to themselves, why are we putting our reserves in treasuries, which they have been not selling them, but slowly allowing them to become a smaller portion of their balance sheet. And they've been increasing their purchases of gold. Now that's on the government level, but from a Chinese consumer level, there's another new catalyst, and that is the housing market. The housing market there is in shambles, and frankly, prices there are likely to drop 30 to 50% if the market was allowed to take over. So what are consumers doing instead? They're buying gold. Because they don't see the Chinese property market as a good store value anymore. So Western investors are not behind this move. It's money flowing from the East. And Western investors have not caught on. So what's going to happen when investors do start chasing that? Like they're chasing Bitcoin and AI stocks. Things will be very, very interesting. And I think you could eventually get well past the all-time inflation-adjusted high, which was in 1980. That's inflation-adjusted $3,355 per troy ounce. I think that's very possible over the next 3 to 5 years. Would not shock me. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART. We'll be right back.